Welcome to another exciting podcast from the Havines Institute. Now remember, we're going to have our podcast question at the end, so if you're the first one to answer it correctly and send it to huffinespodcast@hokn.tamu.edu, we'll give you a free t-shirt that you can show all your friends. I also want to announce our first ever Huffines discussion. It'll be on April 1st from 1 to 4 p.m. in Rudder Auditorium at Texas A&M University. So what's a Huffines discussion? Well, we're going to bring in 8 national leaders and thinkers in the clinical exercise physiology and sports medicine world. We're going to give each of them 18 minutes to give a lay-level talk, and you should come out and hear what they have to say. So again, that's April 1st, 1 to 4 p.m. in Rudder Auditorium at Texas A&M University. Come out, be part of the action.
Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast. Brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
I'd like to welcome everybody today to the Sports Medicine Podcast from the Huffines Institute. Thank you so much for joining us today, for taking the time to download us, and now for listening to us. I hope that you will find that our guests that we have every week are entertaining and informative. We try to bring you the wild and varied world that is sports medicine. And so today we are very excited to have with us Mr. Lance Munksgaard, who is the head pit crew coach for Red Bull Racing. And that's the NASCAR version of that here in the United States. So welcome to the podcast, Lance.
Thanks, Dr. Lightfoot. I appreciate your having me on.
Well, you're more than welcome. You're on TV every week, and I'm sure that there are a lot of people out there that are listening that don't realize that all these pit crews that do these pit stops in such a short amount of time have actual coaches. And so can you... I guess let's just start off with, tell us a little bit about a pit crew athlete and what they have to do on a weekly basis.
On a weekly basis, our pit crew athletes will have a couple different job titles. One, obviously, their main focus, especially here at Red Bull, is to be the pit crew members that go over the wall and change tires on Sunday or Saturday night, depending on the race time. They also have shop jobs, depending on what their skill level is, whether... some of them are mechanics that work on the race cars. Some are guys that work in the paint and body areas. Some work in the chassis shop. We have a different level of guys. And Red Bull Racing especially has worked really hard on bringing in more of the athlete side and training them to do the pit stop version. And then, we're in the process of teaching them the mechanic side or shop skill. We have several guys who also work in our marketing department, so they're using their education where they went and played, whether it was football or hockey or, whatever their sport was, when we recruited them, in the shop. So it's definitely a different version than what has been in NASCAR in the past, and it's nice to be a part of. And we got some really good athletes and guys that we work with here.
Well, now, at least 3 times, I think, in the last 2 sentences, you have used the word athlete to describe the pit crew member. So let's just get this question out of the way that some people may be listening. Can you tell us a little bit about why you think that pit crew members and drivers are athletes? So many people say, well, especially the drivers, that's the ones they see. They sit in the car and they drive around for 3 hours. And the pit crew guys, they work for, 12 seconds, 8 or 9 times a race, and that doesn't make them athletes. What do you say to that?
Obviously, I'm, quite biased on the question. Otherwise, I wouldn't be in the sport. But, these guys, especially the pit crew side, we'll start with that. What we do in 12 seconds is amazing to watch these guys work, and they have to be athletic to do this. The fitness stuff we do from day-to-day basis is amazing. It's up there with you would at the college level, at least, if not a little bit more.
So these guys are training every day.
Yeah, we're training every day, practicing every day, reviewing film, having meetings. We do a lot of things that are similar to the college in the NFL. We've done some comparisons to some of the NFL times where they're how much time they spend in meetings and workouts and on the field with practicing, and we do as much Obviously, they don't get paid anywhere near as much, but the athlete side is definitely there, and that's why you've seen these pit stop times over the last seven or eight years really come down and being very competitive across the board. In the past, there have been a couple teams who have been good at doing efficient pit stops, but nowadays there's if there's 43 cars, there's 30 of them that have really good and competitive pit crews. So it's definitely changed the atmosphere on pit road each week. And, obviously then, our main part is to help our drivers, who we believe are true athletes as well. Even though they're sitting down for 3 hours or 4 hours, their hand-eye coordination, their focus especially, is tremendous, especially dealing with the heat and, the G-forces that they deal with throughout the whole day.
Yeah. What kind of heat do they have in the cockpit?
Obviously we've kind of done some testing in the past, and, it's anywhere up around, 140 degrees or more, in the cockpit with, obviously their fire suits and helmets on, and they dehydrate a lot just, because of the sweating. And, they do a good job nowadays of trying to rehydrate throughout the race with some new Gatorade systems that I think you've kind of been involved with, Dr. Lightfoot, but, it's an amazing system, to try to rehydrate these guys. But, the other part that really is amazing to watch them is their shoulder and core stability throughout the race to, to stay upright and stay focused on just what they have to do. And in the old days, obviously, the seats weren't as good, so their core stuff had to be a little bit better. But even today, if you think about sitting in your car, and you sit in your car for 3 or 4 hours, and it's not a real comfy seat, your abs and your low back really kind of take a lot of abuse throughout a 3 or 4 hour period. And that's not driving around, in circles at a certain G load, all day either. So there's a lot that goes into the driver's training side of it too. And we don't deal with as much here at Red Bull because our, several drivers, have their own, strength conditioning specialists to deal with them. And, they're usually out of town quite a bit. So they have to do a lot on their own when they're out, traveling and stuff. So we don't deal with them as much here at the shop, but, they do a great job with their conditioning side and being athletes.
Yeah, well, and that's amazing. And that's, I guess, if anything, the audience takes away from this, and we'll certainly talk about the pit crews extensively, but these drivers, they're in 140-degree heat, and that varies somewhat given the environmental condition, but usually it's up around 140 degrees. And they're in fire suits with helmets on, and they're pulling Gs. I think I read someplace that at some of these tracks they're pulling 3.5, 4 Gs for 4 hours.
Yep.
Pretty amazing folks for that. But let's talk back about the pit crews for a while, because these guys are also all in fire suits and helmets and gloves and so forth, and it's not cool standing on that concrete or that asphalt at times, is it?
No, it's I kind of correlate it to a toaster oven.
Oh.
because if you look at most of the racetracks are all asphalt in the center, with aluminum bleachers all the way around. So with the sun beating down the middle, you're really getting kind of toasted from three sides. So it is definitely, for the most part, places we go throughout the middle of the summer are warm areas. But, it's amazing how well these guys do with the fire suits and the helmets and, how prepared they are. A lot of them hydrate really well the night before, day before, and then obviously throughout the day. And we really don't see a lot of major issues with heat-wise. There may be some issues that underlying that we don't always see from a focus standpoint or fatigue standpoint, but, we work really hard with our, heat training and our training here at the shop to try to remove some of that. So it's a great testament to what these guys do here at the shop.
Yeah.
Around at the racetrack on Sundays.
Well, it's interesting to come back to something you said earlier, that these guys watch film. What do they watch on film?
Just like, you would with, football, basketball, baseball, anytime you can watch, the plays, what you're doing, how your fundamentals of what you're trying to do, your movements, anytime you can make those more efficient, the better off your stops are going to be. And, similar to football, we try to watch our plays, what we call our plays. When we come in and do a four-tire stop, it's not as simple as just four tires and gas. There's usually adjustments involved, fixing fenders, pulling tape off the car. There's a lot of little things that don't get, kind of pointed out on TV as much. So we really have, in a sense, plays that we do. So we'll watch those at the racetrack, after a pit stop, and make sure if we have, an area that needs to be worked on for the next stop, that we address it. And then also when we come back on Monday, we'll break down the entire pit stop into tenths of seconds. So we know exactly throughout the whole stop where we lost a tenth here, a tenth there, a half a second here. So we know, you know, where we need to work on and what things we need to do drill-wise and practice-wise throughout the week to try to make that better so the following week we don't run into those problems.
Yeah. In some sports, it's easy to appreciate the effect of a tenth of a second. You know, I think about swimming and some of the close finishes and so forth. But I think that many people with auto racing in particular, they can't appreciate how important a tenth of a second or even a second is on pit road.
Yeah, you know, if you look at if a car goes around the racetrack in 28 seconds and most of the cars are all running within two or three tenths of each other throughout the race, you know, if we got a 2-second lead and we come in for a green flag stop and we lose 3 seconds, now you're not leading the race anymore. You're running second or third.
Right.
You know, so when you talk about tenths of seconds getting on and off your road and what we spend time in the inside the pit box, It's a huge part of our day, and it's a very, you know, it's a lot easier to pass cars on pit road than it is on the racetrack. And obviously our drivers remind us that all the time. So,
sure.
The better we can do inside that box and help the team gain spots on pit road, or, you know, and most of the time, you know, our goal is to maintain and let the drivers, you know, race, the better we are. So,
yeah. Well, and the way with prize money nowadays, you know, finishing third versus first can be a significant difference in prize money as well.
And even just the sponsorship side of this, you know, the better we perform as a group, the better off, you know, we all are from longevity of the sport and showing well for the sponsors and the people, you know, obviously around us. And yeah, it's very important. I mean, in the 10 years ago, I don't think it was as kind of cutthroat, if you want to say, and that it is right now. So every spot, every race is as important as the next one or train, especially just because of the way the sponsorship dollars are going.
Yeah. So I'd really like the audience to think about this for just a second. So you're talking about the difference between a 12.5-second pit stop and a 13.5-second pit stop. Just 1 second having a large effect not only on the outcome but also on the financial health of the team. Big deal.
Yep, absolutely. You know, and unfortunately for our pitcher guys, you know, they do this 38 weeks a year and probably an average of 8 pit stops a weekend just on the, you know, on the cup side.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of those stops could cause us to not win a race. And, you know, if that correlates to a large amount of money or a sponsorship issue, you know, there's a lot of pressure placed upon these guys, which is a little bit different than, you know, a lot of professional sports. I mean, you don't see quarterbacks, you know, wide receivers getting fired for dropping a pass in the end zone or fumbling a football. You know, obviously if they do it on a multiple times, you know, they may not be the starter anymore, but these guys, you know, have a lot of pressure. Sometimes it's, if you make that big mistake, you don't have a job come. So it's a very stressful business when it comes to that, and it's very tough to compete at that level when you're kind of looking over your shoulder making sure, you know, this isn't going to be your last pit stop. So we try to make a very kind of stress-free atmosphere for them so they don't have to feel like this is going to be their last pit stop.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, we try to give them the confidence they need to do their jobs and put all the rest of the stuff behind them, you know, so they perform well. And, you know, we've done that pretty well here at last year and a half here at Red Bull.
Because I think there are examples out there where pit crew members have been let go in the middle of races.
Yeah, and obviously just recently, we had the whole team swap of the 24 and 48 weeks ago. And, and that doesn't happen a lot, but there's definitely situations where teams have to perform. And if, you know, just like any other day, you know, in a normal sport, that if the guys aren't on and aren't being efficient doing a pit stop and there's a better guy waiting in the wings to do it, then that needs to be, you know, that call needs to be made to make that change and hopefully it goes better.
Yeah, and I tell you, this conversation now is, I think, going to lead to a couple of different questions. I think the first one maybe that the audience is interested in is, you had said something a while ago about these guys aren't paid like other professional athletes. Is being a pit crew member on a Sprint Cup, which is the highest level stock car racing, is that financially rewarding?
The financial side of it, I think these guys make great money.
Hmm.
You know, it's obviously not anywhere between probably $80,000 to $120,000 a year.
So some people in the audience are going, wait, they're getting paid up to $120,000 a year just to change tires?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
to do it quickly, though.
Yeah, and hopefully to do it really well.
Yeah.
That varies on, experience level, what position they are. Obviously, tire changers and our jackmen are usually the higher paid guys. Because their tasks are harder. It's more, more skilled than the other positions. Just similar to, probably your quarterbacks, receivers, versus some linemen and, those type of things. So, but they get paid well. Obviously the downfall to it is the sport is, if you do lose a job, you don't have a lot of money behind you in a contract that can help you move somewhere else. So obviously all the teams are located right here or close to right here in Charlotte. And, it's not like you pick up and go from Pittsburgh to Seattle or to Detroit, and get another job. It's a tough business, if you start losing, you lose a job and try to find another one, so.
Yeah. So I guess, and that leads also to the idea about, how do people become pit crew members? And let's start with you. How did you become a pit crew coach? What kind of training did you have to go through? Is this just something you wandered in off the interstate one day to a race team and said, I want to do this? And they said, Lance, we just think you're great. We were going to make you the pit crew coach?
I wish it would have been that easy. It's definitely, a different avenue, especially, with my background of athletic training and sports medicine. It's something I wanted to do even when I, went into grad school. I really kind of in the back of my mind thought, man, I really would like to use my, my athletic training degree in racing. Mm-hmm. And figuring out how to do that was a little bit of a problem. But I moved here to North Carolina, was a head athletic trainer at Belmont Abbey College for a year just to get myself in the area and mm-hmm. kind of get my feet wet in racing. I'm blessed because I had a twin brother who moved here and was starting out in the racing industry as well in more of the engineering side of it. But so he gave me some connections, took a job working for an orthopedic surgeon as a clinical assistant and athletic trainer, which gave me my nights and weekends free, which you don't quite have as much as a certified athletic trainer.
Right.
And that gave me some time to meet up with Breon Klopp, who was an athletic trainer that started a pit instruction and training facility here in North Carolina that basically teaches people how to do pit stops, whether it's gassing the car, changing tires, jacking the car, whatever position they want to do. There's an 8-week program they go through, which is a fantastic program. So I went through that program, kind of with Breon and helped them evaluate their program, which was great for me. So that's really where I got my experience in the pit stop side, was going through the classes.
So I guess before we go on, so if we have somebody listening who says, I would really like to be on a pit crew, they can, I think they can go on the web to pit instruction and training, and they can look at the classes because they do offer classes in how to be a pit crew member.
Yep. It's a great facility. It's a beautiful area. And they do a great job. They teach you all the positions, at one time, with the class. And then as you kind of move on and progress, obviously there's, certain criteria, for guys who are going to be tire changers versus a jackman or a tire carrier. So depending on where you're going to kind of find your niche, then you'll start to develop more towards being a tire changer, or a gas man, depending on, what skill set you have the best towards the end of the class. But it gives you a round base of, okay, these are all the positions. You realize how hard one is, how hard another one is, what it takes to do each of those positions. And they also teach you all the rules and regulations of pit road and what not to do. And there's a lot of athletes that have gone through that program. So there's a lot of examples of what to do and what not to do, which is always really good experience to hear from guys. Because the downfall for our sport, even from a recruiting athletes to do this, is there's no Little League pit stops. There's no Babe Ruth pit stops. There's no place to go find guys who have already done pit stops, in a minor league system of some sort. So basically we've had to kind of create our own minor league system in startup level, which is where pit instruction and training comes. And also, we do our own version of it here at the shop for Red Bull, which we have a developmental program where we'll bring guys in and teach them. And we prefer to have some of the guys with some of the base knowledge of it first, and then we kind of take them from there. So we get quite a few athletes from pit instruction and training, and then also we have our own that we've recruited in from Rutgers and Arizona State and different places like that. So
what are you looking for when you're recruiting for somebody for the pit crew? Let's say you had your opportunity to go out and pick anybody you want. What kind of characteristics are you looking for in someone?
you know, I had a feeling this question would come up. it's a tough answer because there's no combine, there's no way to look at that. When we bring athletes in, we have them do bench press, we have them do shuttle runs, we have them do that kind of thing. But we really have not found a strong indicator on what makes a great, you know, pick your athlete. You know, the biggest thing I've found so far is we've had a lot of athletes that have come into the sport. The one criteria that I think that makes it the best out of all of them is you got to find a guy who can do everything well.
Mm.
Everything well means, like, we have two guys on our pickers right now that are great at what they do,
mm-hmm.
but they are also great at everything else they do. They're great at shooting pool.
Mm.
They're great at shooting, at throwing darts. They're great at bowling. They're great at, you know what I mean? They're just really mm-hmm. good at whatever they do. They're just the guys that you hate to hang out with because no matter what you go do, they're better than you. Yeah. So it's interesting because, and they do great, obviously, weight training wise and conditioning wise and all the drills and stuff we do. But
so kind of good all around athletes.
Yeah. I mean, it's just got to be a really good all around guy. It doesn't have to be, there's guys that have tried to go get the elite Division One athletes to come and do this. Sometimes it always doesn't always work because it takes a lot of dedication. We do this 38 weeks a year. You know, it's obviously decent pay, but starting out it's not.
Mm.
So there's a lot of work involved in getting up to speed to do it, a lot of time commitment to do it,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of discipline on the road. You know, so it doesn't always work to have just a pure athlete that needs to go do it. You have to have the drive and the passion for racing
right.
to do it well.
Right. Now, you use the word guys several times. Are there women in the pit
crew? Yeah, I'm probably not politically correct by right. using guys, because there are females that do pit stops. Several of them have come out of pit instruction and training, which is I was good friends with Nicole Addison, who came out of pit instruction and training. She did a fantastic job. One of the uphill battles for females is the strength side of it. And most of the time you see the females that are in racing that are tire changers,
mm.
Because that position doesn't make them, you know, have to lift as much,
mm-hmm.
during our type of a pit stop, so they can hit lugs and pull tires a little bit easier. So
yeah.
That's usually where they seem to be focused a little bit more, and they do a good job doing it.
And I mean, when we talk about the strength aspect of this, you know, just the tire carriers, you may look on TV and watch these guys carry the tires around, you think, oh, that's not a big deal. But those tires often can weigh 80 pounds.
Yeah, they're about 80 to 85, depending on whether they have inner liners in them.
Yeah.
And our, you know, and even on the gas side, our gas cans are weighing 90 about 89 to 90 pounds, you know, full of fuel. So, you know, there's a lot of strength that goes into this. You know, you're not just kind of running around, you know, holding a tire, you know, a light tire. It's the balance of strength and agility as well.
Yeah. Wow. So you told us that you have a degree in athletic training. You're a certified athletic trainer. So there's certainly a sports medicine background in that. Is that normal for pit crew coaches in NASCAR nowadays?
There are, I think, two other certified athletic trainers that are in a coaching role. Several of the other coaching avenues are really more exercise science
mm-hmm.
or exercise phys, you know, guys that have done some strength and conditioning stuff, and also coaching in other avenues. You know, and there's some other guys who are coaching currently that just started, you know, have been doing pit stops for quite a while and, you know, got to the kind of retirement side of doing pit stops and kind of went into the coaching version of it. So it's continuing to grow more as a, you know, an avenue that is needed
mm-hmm.
and well-respected. And obviously from an athletic training standpoint, if, you know, we can bring the education and the knowledge, you know, behind the, you know, the exercise science and exercise phys and athletic training side to racing, you know, it only builds more credibility for us and what we're doing. And I think the teams, obviously, over the last 5 or 6 years have really seen the benefit of the athletic training side, being able to keep our guys healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we really focus on our stretching and flexibility programs. Every morning we bring our guys in, and that's the first thing we do in the start of our day is we take a half hour and do our flexibility and stretching program, which has really been good for the guys. So you know, I think the teams see more and more what we can do for them, what services we can provide. So
yeah, there are two things that strike me about the pit crew athletes, and is the length of the season, and you've already talked about how it's 38 weeks long, but also the their game day. You know, we think most professional athletes, they may go to the locker room and change clothes and get in their pads and they warm up and then they play their game. It doesn't really work that way with pit crew athletes, does it?
No, the downfall for for us going to the racetrack is that one, we usually the guys have a day or maybe 2 days off before we go to the racetrack. Usually on a standard weekend, we'll start the race at say 1 o'clock in the afternoon,
mm-hmm.
but we'll leave Charlotte on an airplane usually somewhere around 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, so they're not at the track already.
No, we'll start, depending on where we're at. If we're on the West Coast, we'll go out a day early.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, our pit crew guys will fly out on Sunday morning, the morning of the race. But, so you're starting out, if you're flying out at 4:30 or 5, most of the guys are up by 3 or 3:30
mm-hmm.
To get to the racetrack. Usually the garage opens at the racetrack at 7 a.m., therefore that's why we're, starting out so early.
Yeah.
But you will work from 7 to, say, 1 o'clock, getting basically preparing for the race.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, setting up the pit box, getting tires prepped and glued for the race, having a team meeting. The guys usually have a little bit of downtime in there to kind of rest and hang out a little bit and get some food. But basically, I always kind of correlate to football a little bit. It'd be like asking the football team to come set up the stadium before they play.
That wouldn't go very far, would it?
No, I don't think so. And then, asking them to perform at the highest level. And basically, that's what we do.
Yeah.
We make them get up early. We make them work before, from 7 to 1 o'clock and then expect them to perform at that level.
In the heat.
In the heat. Yeah. And then under the pressure that we provide for them. And then, we get back on a plane and fly home right after the race. And, usually it's you're home at between 9 and 9 o'clock and midnight. So, it's a long day from 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning to midnight. So, that's just our Sunday. So, we do a good job of trying to get them to recover on Monday when we come in, do yoga and some cardio stuff just to get them kind of recovering a little bit and get ready to do the whole week over again with our training and practice sessions. So, it's a very different schedule that we keep. And it'd be one thing if we came in and did our conditioning and our practice stuff, and then the guys got to go home and enjoy their families or got to go play a round of golf or something relaxing.
Right.
But when they're not doing the practice or the training sessions with us, they're at the shop working.
Right.
So they have, more 8-hour days, normal 8-hour days within all this, going to the racetrack and stuff. So it's very different.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we often think of football season being 16 weeks long, pro football season being 16 weeks long, and basketball season being 7 months long. And you're really talking about racing season going from February till mid-November. And within that time, there are probably, 3 weekends off?
Yeah, each year and I haven't even looked at the new schedule for next year, but, typically we have 3 weekends off a year. So it's a very tough, scheduling of family vacations for the guys.
Mm-hmm.
Rest and relaxation in there. They rarely get time off during the week, extra time off, because obviously each week is important for us. So you can't go, oh, we're not going to practice this week, or oh, we're not going to work out this week. And that leads you into even our strength and conditioning schedule.
Hmm.
If you talk about power phases and different sessions throughout the year of our conditioning, when do you have your recovery time? When do you have your power versus maintenance and those type of things, because there's really little time for us to really ramp things up and ramp it down, to give the guys time to recover. So it's a tricky strength and conditioning season as well. So
yeah, well, and I think the reason I bring it up and we've talked about it so much is that I think that's what the general public doesn't realize. They see these guys on Sunday and they don't realize that they are at it almost all year, and it is tough from an athletic standpoint to continue to keep that effort at 100% that whole time. So, and I think that way stock car racing is unique in that it's such a long season and it demands such perfection, so many times during that year. So.
Yeah, and we see trends, throughout the year where the guys are doing really well performance-wise and being efficient with their task, and then we'll drop off for a couple of weeks. And of course, the crew chiefs and the management don't like to see it, but it's a part of athletics. You're gonna go through some ups and downs, and not everybody in this 7-man crew is gonna perform at their best every week. So there's definitely some trends throughout the year that we see that, we try to get rid of by, noticing them ahead of time and work on them, but definitely a tough coaching side of it to keep them motivated and focused for that long of a season.
Yeah. Well, Lance, we're coming up on the end of our time here. We always like to give our guests the opportunity to give the audience a take-home message. So if you had one thing you wanted people to remember about pit crews and stock car racing, what would that be?
I think, just realizing that, the racing side of it is becoming more and more of true athletes performing these pit stops. And I truly love and enjoy watching the pit stops because, it's really awesome choreographed process that we do. So next time they watch a race, hopefully they'll be able to watch a little bit closer and see some of the small details that we do on pit road and realize that we work really hard at trying to make that happen.
A good take-home message. And so I would also encourage you all, next time you watch a race, look for the Red Bull team and look for Lance. He's always there on pit road directing his guys. And Lance, thanks so much for the time today. And thank you all for listening. I would remind you all that you can tune in or pull up the HuffEinsInstitute.tamu, and that's TAMU.edu/podcast every week, and it's a plural on podcast, by the way. Pull it up every week, and you can see the new podcast that we have. And even better yet, once you're there, go ahead and subscribe. Just click the button. It's easy enough to do, and that way, every week when we put these podcasts up on Friday, it'll be downloaded into your computer automatically. And that way you're never without something to listen to that is indicative of what's happening in sports medicine. So again, thank you for taking the time to download and subscribe and tell your friends, blog about us. Tell everyone. We'd like people to know. So I want to thank our producer, Justin, who's been sitting over here making us keep an idea on what's happening on time. And we'll turn it over to John here for the closing credits. And in the meantime, we want you to remember to be active and be well.
So this week's podcast question is, what racing team is Lance a part of? Be the first one to answer this and send it to HuffEinsPodcast@hokn.tamu, and we'll get you that t-shirt.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Justin Dobson and licensed by the HuffEinz Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to HuffEinsPodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the HuffEinz Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.